Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. It is estimated that mental health issues affect 1 in 4 individuals each year, but just 16% seek treatment. One barrier is cost, and in a down economy, the number of people in need goes up and the number who can afford it shrinks. Today we'll hear about a new program in Franklin County that brings volunteer mental health professionals together with those in need of counseling. Later on in the hour, we'll talk to one of the organizations that refers clients for mental health services to the new program. Joining us now is Laura Moskow-Siegel. She is the executive director of Mental Health America of Franklin County, the organization behind the new program. Laura is a licensed social worker and adjunct faculty at Ohio State University. She's the recipient of many awards for her work in the mental health field from NAMI Ohio, Jewish Family Services, Adam H., welcome to the show, Laura.
Thank you, Ann. Great to be here.
Also, Jennifer Martinez, she is the director of the Pro Bono Counseling Program, as it is known, for Mental Health America of Franklin County. She is a licensed independent social worker and serves as a liaison to Ohio's psychiatric hospital system. Welcome to the show, Jennifer.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
How long has this been in the works, Laura? How long have you been thinking about this? What was the tipping point?
We've been talking about this program for about 10 years, and 10 years ago we looked at it and decided that the wait for mental health services was about a month, and that actually wasn't too bad. You sort of wait a month to see your dermatologist, so we thought that we could probably live with that. Well, in the last year and a half, with all of the budget cuts at the state level and the federal level as well, access to mental health care has totally diminished here in Franklin County, and unless you are suicidal and have a written plan to commit that suicide, you are really not getting the help you need here in Franklin County. So Mental Health America decided we really needed to step up and create this brand new pro bono counseling program.
When you say there was a month wait 10 years ago, what do you mean by that? A month wait to get free counseling?
That's correct.
Any counseling?
Yeah, okay. Typically with the Adam H. system, the Alcohol, Drug, and Mental Health Board is our Franklin County system of care, which was one of the best in the country. And now because of budget cuts, nothing having to do with Adam, but because of the budget cuts themselves, we have been forced to basically limit services to people with either Medicaid or private insurance are the only ones getting mental health treatment right now.
So, Jennifer Martinez, what are your expectations as far as numbers go at this point?
Well, at this point,
what are you bracing for?
We're bracing for quite a storm, to be honest. I worked in the public mental health system for the last 5 years, and I've seen how those budget cuts have affected people that don't have insurance, and it's really affected them, you know, in the most extreme sense. If you don't have insurance, your access is very, very limited. So at this point, as of today, we have 62 volunteer clinicians. I took 10 phone calls this morning before we came in to do the show.
From after Misty Crane's story,
yes,
was ran in the dispatch,
yes,
this morning,
and,
right?
And 10 people have called and said, you know, I saw this in the dispatch and I need counseling. Some of them have needed counseling, it sounds like, for quite a long time, but they had nowhere to turn. They didn't know where to go. And so now we're here, and we're hopefully another resource they can use to help get back on their feet.
So Adam H. now, the resources have been cut so much, they can only deal with the most critical cases. That's sort of much what they're geared up for at this point.
Yes, their mission is really what we call SMI, which is people with severe mental illness, and that really is their mission. And so people who what we call sort of the worried well, who may have an issue related to stress in their family, someone may have lost a job, so they lost their insurance, stress is very high, the kids are not doing well because of that stress, whatever the issue is, those are the kind of folks that we're hoping to help with this new program.
Now, people with worried well, is that how you put it?
Yes.
Worried well, tend not to get help anyway. That there's not, I mean, when you're critical, it's different. Mm-hmm. But there's already that. So what kind of numbers are you anticipating at this point to fill the berths with the 62 volunteers?
Well, we are asking each volunteer to take a minimum of one client per year, and we're looking at short-term counseling, which is 6 to 8 counseling sessions a year. A lot of the volunteers, though, are really stepping up and saying they'll take one client at any given time. So if each one takes 8 weeks, you know, they could take 7 or 8 clients in a year. So our hope is to be able to see a minimum of about 120 clients for this first year of the program.
You're listening to All Sides with Dan Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. And my guests right now, Laura Moskow-Siegel. She is Executive Director of Mental Health America of Franklin County, and also Jennifer Martinez. She is the director for the new pro bono counseling program, and that is what we are talking about today. If you want more information about that program, you can call 614-884-7227 or go to mhafc.org. We'll have the phone number and the link to that email address on our website at wosu.org/allsides if you want to check that out some more. There's a card that you're handing out. It looks all pretty organized. This isn't by the seat of your pants. It says in Misty's story today, you turned to Maryland in a program in Maryland. Tell us about that.
That's correct. Maryland has a program for the last 21 years called the Pro Bono Counseling Project, and they have been doing the same thing that we're going to do here, only on a statewide basis. And they've got over 700 volunteers, seeing over 1,000 clients a year. And they have done such an amazing job that we really wanted to look at replicating theirs. It didn't make sense to reinvent the wheel when we had such a good program out there to model. So they have provided us incredible technical support for the last year and a half, from everything from form development to website to referrals, how to make an appropriate referral, who's appropriate client to serve. All of those issues really have been developed in collaboration with the Maryland Project.
We're going to talk with Isi Ikaraba from the Physicians Free Clinic. And she'll tell us how they do those kind of referrals from their end. But otherwise, if people aren't going to the free clinic, where else are they getting referrals from? How else can they get a referral? And you require a referral.
No, not necessarily. Okay. People can self-refer.
Okay.
They can, just reach out to us directly via the website or the phone number that's on the card. That's actually my direct line, and they can call that line and either leave a message or speak to me, and we can kind of do a questionnaire over the phone and determine what their needs are and if they can benefit from the pro bono program.
I assumed referrals would be required because it would be a way to screen out people who maybe don't qualify financially. Maybe they're trying to avoid going through their insurance. Sometimes people don't want to go through their insurance for mental health care.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's part of the conversation that I have with them. We are accepting referrals from other resources, of course. We have, put cards out at the settlement houses and crisis services. We'll be going to emergency rooms and things of that nature. But people can just call directly, or they can go to the website and fill out the questionnaire themselves. Mm-hmm. And then from that point, we link them with a counselor based on what their needs are.
Who aren't you taking care of in this program, Laura?
At this point, people under the age of 18, unless they're with their parents. So we will do family counseling, but we will not do individual counseling with children under the age of 18. And that really was because children have much better access to care right now. It's still not great by any means, but it is much better than the adult system. And so we felt that area was covered. We also are not accepting folks who have a presenting problem of alcohol or substance addiction. Doesn't mean that they can't have an underlying issue, which a lot of folks do who have a mental health concern. But if that's their presenting problem, that they're drinking too much and they want counseling, unfortunately, that's not one of the criteria that we're looking at right now. Also, people with chronic mental illness, obviously severe mental illness, if they're already diagnosed with bipolar or schizophrenia or depression, those are not necessarily ones who would fit into our criteria right now.
Now, when it comes to children, you're saying that they're pretty much taken care of, not completely, but pretty much by what? How are children taken care of? If their parents aren't insured, they're not insured.
Right, but they're much more eligible for Medicaid than adults. It's much easier to get children on the Medicaid system, and also just the Adam H. agencies that serve children have better accessibility right now to accept new clients that are children as opposed to adults.
614-292-8513. If you have a question or comment for our guest, Jennifer Martinez, director of the Pro Bono Counseling Program at the Mental Health America of Franklin County, and also executive director Laura Moskow-Siegel of Mental Health America of Franklin County. Now, this is only for Franklin County residents.
That's correct. Our hope is that once everything is working well, any possible glitches get worked out, we will be looking at rolling it out to the adjacent counties from Franklin and then eventually going statewide in the next 2 years.
Jennifer, how hard was it to recruit the licensed clinicians that you needed to participate?
You know, we've had a tremendous outpouring from the community. There's a great deal of support behind this. And as I said earlier, we already have over 60 people that have signed up to volunteer, and every day that number goes up. A lot of it has just been going out and talking to people about this program and what this really means. What we have found is that a lot of the people in helping professions, the psychologists, psychiatrists, social workers, counselors, they're already seeing people on a pro bono basis. They may have had someone that they'd been seeing and they lost their job and the insurance, but they continue to work with them because they know the person needs services. So what we're really doing is giving them a field to get that organized and running in an efficient way. But every time I go to a counseling center and talk to people, the response is wonderful, and I always have more people that sign up. So it'll be an ongoing process. You know, we have 62 volunteers, but, of course, we're always looking for more. So, you know, the website, you can also sign up to be a volunteer if you happen to be a licensed professional.
And the website is?
MHAFC.org.
Okay, MHAFC.org. That's the website, or you can call 614-884-7227. We'll post that information on our website at WOSU.org/allsides. If you have a question or comment for our guests, you want to know if you might qualify or what, you know, how it would work, you can call us at 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. If somebody participates in this program as a client, Jennifer, would they meet with the therapist or the clinician in their offices, or is there some place they go differently than the regular offices?
It depends on the volunteer clinician. We have had some people that work in a private practice setting. They have their own offices, and they're willing to see pro bono clients there. Some of the counseling centers that are encouraging their staff to participate in this program are allowing them to see pro bono clients there. We also understand that if you work in the public sector, that you may not have the ability to see someone there at your office. So we have worked with United Methodist Churches and the Settlement Houses and the Peer Center to work out a schedule where people can be seen at those locations also. Our goal is that a person shouldn't have to travel more than 5 miles to get to a location where they can meet with their counselor, because we understand that transportation is an issue as well.
Okay. We have to take a quick break. When we return, we'll be joined by Volunteer Services Director at Physicians Free Clinic, ECE Caraba. And if you have any more questions, if you have any questions or comments, we'll take those as well. 614-292-8513 if you want to make that call right now. We'll be right back. This is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News.
There's talk, and then there's talk that matters. Tune into Talk of the Nation and hear experienced voices, informed views, and smart calls. We'll tackle the day's top stories and discuss the most interesting topics, the issues that affect you. I'm Neil Conan. Join us for the next Talk of the Nation from NPR News.
Talk of the Nation is on this afternoon from 2 until 4, right here on 89.7 NPR News. It's 23 degrees in downtown Columbus, a few snow flurries today and a high of 32, partly cloudy tonight, a low of 19. Mostly sunny for Wednesday with a high of 42.
Support for 89.7 NPR News comes from Capital University Law School, helping to prepare tomorrow's leaders for success in the legal community. More details on becoming a paralegal, legal nurse consultant, or life care planner at their open house February 23rd.
All Sides with Ann Fisher continues on 89.7 NPR News.
Welcome back to All Sides. We're talking about a new program, a pro bono counseling program to link volunteer mental health professionals with those in need in Franklin County. It's operated by the Mental Health America of Oak Franklin County. And joining us today is the Executive Director, Laura Moskow-Siegel, of the Mental Health America of Franklin County. Laura, thanks again for joining us.
Thank you, Ann.
And also the Pro Bono Counseling Program Director, Jennifer Martinez. Jennifer, glad you could be here.
Thanks, Ann.
And Physicians Free Clinic Volunteer Services Director, Isi Ikaraba, joins us now. Isi, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Ann, for having me.
This has got to have been a long-term issue for you and the folks that work at the Physicians Free Clinic. Often physical problems and illnesses are preceded by someone, you know, who's mentally ill or suffering from depression or something like that.
Well, through the last year, we've begun to see an increase in number of folks who are coming to us either through our clinic, where we have physicians who come down to volunteer, or we also have physicians that volunteer in our offices that are sending us more referrals for patients that they're seeing that have or need for mental health services. And that is out of the scope of services that we provide, but because of the increase in number of folks who need those services, we've been a little bit trying to figure out how we can help those folks. So we have a volunteer psychiatrist as well that is at the clinic and does not provide counseling services. So the only thing we can do for those patients is to help them fill medications, but we know that that is not adequate to get someone the proper mental health services that they need.
So what have you been doing besides a psychiatrist? Have you been looking for pro bono clinicians on your own?
Well, we try to refer back into the mental health system because we have one here, mm-hmm. And then we get the referrals back. And so what we discovered last year was that there was no place for people who have the anxiety, the depression, the need to talk about family issues to go. And so, unfortunately, we've also just received a barrier in trying to connect those folks. And so Laura came to me last year because we have a similar network set up for volunteers who are providing primary and specialty care services for the same target population, mm-hmm. To talk about some of our experiences and to get our advice about how to set up this volunteer network so that they didn't have to go through the same issues that we had when we originally launched our program. And so we were very excited to learn that this program was going to happen. And with that, our foundation, the Columbus Medical Association Foundation, was also excited. One of their focuses is to help out in a healthcare safety net area. And so when Laura came to them with a proposal about this program, it was a great fit to continue that work that they're funding for us with the Physicians Free Clinic and the Volunteer Care Network to partner with this program.
Is there any typical scenario you can describe about somebody coming into the Physicians Free Clinic? They don't go to the Physicians Free Clinic for mental health treatment necessarily.
Initially, no.
Right.
We have a social worker, and so what we were finding out was that people were presenting to us with a primary care issue, and then after they saw the primary care doctor, there was a referral for social services. That was in the beginning. Last year and up until now, we are having individuals that come in, and when we're registering, say, I am here for mental health services.
Okay. And Laura, before we move on, I want to take a call. And by the way, if you would like to give us a call and join the conversation, you can call 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. But Laura, what about funding? Who's footing the bill for this? There's all the volunteers, but there has to be some cost.
There is. And as Isi said, Columbus Medical Association Foundation has really stepped up, providing the initial contribution of $50,000, which really started the entire program. American Electric Power Foundation has also come in as a funder, the Columbus Foundation, the Central Ohio Primary Care Foundation, the Columbus Jewish Foundation, CareSource, and Pfizer. So those are the seven that have stepped up within the last year to help kick off the pro bono counseling program here in Franklin County.
We had a caller. She's driving. She just wanted to leave a question with us. Franklin County, it's from Carol. Franklin County is underserved by mental health professionals. It's extremely difficult to get appointments. Will this program work? Is Franklin County underserved? Is everybody underserved right now? Are we worse off than most?
I don't think we're worse off than most. I mean, when you look at southeastern Ohio, who is really bad off, you know, Franklin County looks very good. But they are right. You know, when people do have insurance and they go down their provider list and they start calling people asking if they're taking new clients, a lot of them say no. And that gets frustrating for people who even have insurance, let alone someone who doesn't have insurance and has to use the public system or something like the pro bono program.
So are the folks participating in the pro bono program, are they have extra slots or are they making the time for this?
They're making the time, especially the people in the public system who are working at the comprehensive mental health agencies like Southeast and North Central and North Community. Those are the ones who are going to do this over their lunch hour, or they're going to do it after hours. You know, they've worked a full 8-9 hour shift, and then they're going to take another client after that. So they are really going above and beyond.
614-292-8513 if you'd like to give us a call. And David from Westerville, thanks for holding. You're on the air.
Yes, thank you. I really appreciate this new program. We do need more behavioral health services in Central Ohio. We're far outnumbered by suffering people. I'm glad we got some money for a pro bono service. I would hope that eventually the mental health system would advertise. There's already advertisements for the medicines that are needed. There's some advertisement for the providers, the psychotherapists, but there's no advertisement for the third leg of the stool, which is the self-help groups. I noticed that this pro bono services will not cover chemical dependency. There are 500 AA groups in Central Ohio, probably 50 NA, Narcotics Anonymous groups in Central Ohio, which can take up the slack if they were advertised. There are also roughly 20 support groups for people with emotional disorders, like bipolar disorder. And it was again mentioned that that's a chronic disorder, which would not be serviced by this pro bono system. But if the population knew about these support groups, which are free, donations only, mm-hmm. which meet every week of the year, including the holidays, which do not take off for flu, as a therapist might, because it's a group. It's much more robust.
Someone's always still standing, right?
You got it.
David, let's ask that question, and thank you for your call, David. So
thank
is there
you.
A component in the process for referring people to other organizations that are out there?
There is, actually, because we acknowledge the limits of the program. You know, the criteria is pretty specific. There are people that we will not be able to serve. So in that case, we have sort of a backup program. Mental Health America has the Ombudsman Program. And our ombudsman for Franklin County is Neil Edgar. He actually is the direct supervisor of myself and my program. And the system that we have built in is that if I get a referral for someone who's looking for a pro bono service, and we go through the questionnaire, we talk, and perhaps their issue is more than the pro bono program can take on, or perhaps they have a primary substance abuse problem or a child under 18. In that case, I would then refer them to Neil, who can link them with the appropriate resource in the community. So we do have a good kind of backup plan, if you will, for individuals that are not right for the pro bono program.
Yeah.
Something else, you know, this is designed for individual, but it also volunteers can sign up to do group counseling as well. So that is a possibility if a volunteer really wants to, you know, start up a group and someone is interested in participating in a group as opposed to individual. That's an option also that I wanted to bring up.
EC, would it be helpful to have more than just one psychiatrist volunteering at your point of contact at the physician's free clinic?
So what we would like to do, and what your caller actually alluded to, is what we pride ourselves with, which is called care coordination.
Okay.
And that is something that lacks in this community, which is helping individuals understand where their actual resources are. The healthcare system is very hard to navigate. And so I think that what we're all trying to do is that we are providing linkages to other areas. And so for us, our primary focus is with primary and specialty care. And so what we would like to do is that for those psychiatrists that we have that are interested, like to link them to this pro bono counseling program. So we feel that what we're doing is to help them better coordinate those services and use their expertise. And the same thing would go for them. If they encounter patients that need primary or specialty services, that they actually would connect them with us so that we all focus on what our actual areas of specialty are and that we don't duplicate services. I think one thing that is important to understand is that there's limited resources. And so we want to make sure that the care is being provided where the patient will actually receive the best care possible. And so that, again, we all don't duplicate the services that we all provide.
Okay. I want to take some calls now. But first, Kelly from Hilliard wanted to know if there was a need or if they need any volunteer nurses in the program. Jennifer?
We are absolutely looking for volunteer nurses. If Kelly would like to go to the website or give me a call, we can talk about what it means to be a pro bono volunteer and, you know, what we would like to see from our volunteers. So, yeah, absolutely. Nurses are more than welcome.
Okay. And Naomi from Lancaster, you want to know about services for battered women. Welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you. I'm such a big fan. I'm so excited I'm calling in finally.
Oh, thanks for calling.
Yeah, my comment slash question was that for services with violence against women, I myself am a survivor of rape, and I do have access to, with insurance and mental health. Part of the problem, I think, is finding the right type of program or counseling, but then also how, if you guys partner with organizations, because I know that mental health facilities and sometimes underlying problems are really that there was a traumatic event for a woman, and you sometimes have to dig deep to get to that. So I was wondering if you partner with them or how you would take on those cases.
What we are doing is when a volunteer goes to sign up, they have several different criteria that they can choose as their area of specialty. And domestic violence is there, post-traumatic stress is there, sexual assault is there. And so if they have an area of expertise in, say, post-traumatic stress, they would then check that box. When the client questionnaire is completed, the client has the same options. So if you're, you know, you're calling and you're saying that this is my concern, we would then, you know, link the client and the clinician up in that manner. We would link them up based on the client's need and the clinician's area of expertise so that is hopefully, you know, a really good fit for both.
Okay. Thank you so much for what you're doing. It makes me so happy to hear about this program.
Well, thanks for the feedback. We appreciate the support.
Thanks, Naomi.
Thank you.
Take care.
Thank you.
You bet.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Michelle from Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Yes. My name is Michelle, and I was calling about, I had just basically had a suggestion, and that was, since there's such a low lack of funding for the mental health, I came up with the idea, how about if we could, through this organization, develop small community groups, like in apartment complexes, maybe through the rental office, parenting in schools, the schools that would offer support groups that sometimes, because a lot of times single parents have a lot of issues with depression and because they're trying to pull the load themselves, mm-hmm. even make it almost like a mandate in certain social organizations, I mean, like the welfare office or things that you can kind of zone in and key in, because I see more people with issues that's going on that they could be going out driving cars that could cause all these accidents. And it just, if we could get little small groups of community people to kind of like work along with the community, I think it might help zone in and then report back to the agencies what they see might be a problem, or they might see red flags that this is what we need to target in on in this particular area. Do you think it might help if, you know, we could kind of develop or at least try it as a, you know, like a pilot program?
Thanks, Michelle. Kind of this sort of thing gets people thinking about other ideas, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's a great idea. I mean, we do a lot of support groups now, and there's a lot of them in the community. But if we could figure out a way to get parents involved, because they typically are the ones who are under the most stress, especially single parents who are in low-income families. So we would love to be able to work on any new ideas that people have. So I'd encourage you to call Mental Health America, Franklin County, and Karen Berry is our program coordinator, who is the one who does our support groups, would certainly be interested in talking with them about it.
Thanks, Michelle. That number is 614-884-7227. EC, did you want to say something?
No.
Okay. I wanted to ask you about, someone brought it up earlier, I can't remember who, but the issue of medication. When I was thinking about that yesterday, it reminded me of an email I received and haven't gotten back with, but the issue of the charitable pharmacy. Mm-hmm. What do you do about medication? Is that one of your resources, and what else do you do?
We are working with a charitable pharmacy. They are actually one of our supporters kind of right from the beginning, and I've met with them on several occasions to talk about how we can partner together. A person would still need a prescription mm-hmm. in order to get medications filled, but that's definitely a resource we are teaming up with to make sure that, like EC said, we are all working within our specific scope of practice, but we're all working together to make sure that all of the needs are met, not just one or two.
Okay.
Yeah. We do have some psychiatrists, who have stepped up to volunteer, and what we hear from some of them is that, so much of their job now is medication management, and they go from one client to another, and just making mm-hmm. sure their medication is appropriate. And they forget their roots of going back and why they went into psychiatry, which right. was to counsel people and get them better. And so a lot of them are really excited about actually having clients that they can spend, 50 or 55 minutes with and actually do real counseling with them, as opposed to just the medication management that so many of them are forced to be in because of insurance regulations right now.
And we've learned, too, it's helpful to volunteers to also have that as a resource. I mean, there's nothing like having a patient that needs prescriptions and then you have no access to it. And so we've learned that for us on our side, having access to prescription drugs, and we do also partner with the charitable pharmacy, has been big in keeping our volunteers. When you have these programs, you really want to make this as easy as possible for them to just really worry about taking care of the patient's needs.
Just for folks who want to know more about the charitable pharmacy, there is a website. It's charitablepharmacy.org. So maybe we'll post that to our website, too, in case you're interested in learning more about that. We're out of time right now, though. I want to thank my guests for joining us today. Laura Moskow-Siegel, she's Executive Director of the Mental Health America of Franklin County. Laura, thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much for inviting us. It's been great.
Also, Jennifer Martinez, she is the Director of the Pro Bono Counseling Program, Day 2.
Day 2. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you for joining us. And ECE Caraba, she is with the Volunteer Services Director for the Physicians Free Clinic. EC, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
That's all the time we have. Thanks for your calls. We'll post those websites and the phone number on our website at wosu.org/allsides if you have any more questions. When we return, we're going to talk about Cooper Stadium, so stay tuned. This is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News.
French actor Lambert Wilson stars in the new film of Gods and Men about a group of French monks in an Algerian monastery in 1996 who have to decide whether to stay and most likely be killed by Islamic radicals or to flee. We'll talk with Lambert Wilson on the next Fresh Air.
And Fresh Air begins in 20 minutes. It starts at noon right here on 89.7 NPR News. And thanks for joining us for All Sides with Ann Fisher today. Supporting 89.7 NPR News is easier than ever when you become a sustaining member. Sign up online at wosu.org/sustainer. As a sustaining member, your donation is automatic monthly and ongoing. No more letters in the mail, and your member card will never expire. Every year we'll confirm your membership and you can cancel at any time. Become a sustaining member now at wosu.org/sustainer.
Support for 89.7 NPR News comes from the Wexner Center for the Arts, presenting the off-Broadway solo work Let Me Down Easy by Anna Deavere Smith, star of Nurse Jackie in the West Wing, February 22nd through the 27th at the Lincoln Theater. Tickets at wexarts.org.
It's 23 degrees currently, a scattered snow showers today, a high of 32, no accumulation today. Partly cloudy tonight and a low of 19, sunshine for Wednesday, a high of 42. All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. The Columbus Development Commission recently okayed the rezoning of Cooper Stadium for a racetrack and automotive research facility, but Columbus Mayor Mike Coleman has said he opposes the development as long as the neighbors are dissatisfied with the expected noise levels. As WOSU's Mandy Trimble reports, the mayor isn't the only one with concerns.
Commissioner Marty Anderson also had reservations.
Frankly, I'm glad that this commission really just recommends the city council and that we're not the decision-making body.
RSHOT officials, the developers, said they are eager to meet with the mayor to discuss their plans to spend more than $5 million on state-of-the-art 35-foot sound walls. Joining All Sides right now to catch us up on the issue is Columbus Dispatch reporter Mark Ferencek. Mark, welcome to the show.
Hi, Ann.
So what does it mean? The commission recommended this, so what's the next step?
There are a couple steps. First of all, the city council has to take it up, and they'll probably be doing that. It looks like in April, I was told that I think the last 2 weeks of March they won't be meeting, so it looks like if they're going to take it up, it won't be until April at the earliest. Then after that, they have to go to the Board of Zoning Adjustments for a special permit, and it's there that a lot of the noise issues are going to be examined and argued, certainly at council, but also at the BZA if it gets past council.
Was it a surprise when the mayor came out withholding support?
I think it took a lot of people by surprise, but I just talked with him about all this about an hour ago, and he said that he waited for a couple of reasons. One, he said he didn't want to influence his staff, the zoning staff, or the development commission, who he appoints, in terms of how they decided the issue and how they looked at it. He also said that he had concerns because of his experience and the city's experience with Polaris, the amphitheater that's now closed around the Polaris Mall. There were lots of noise issues there over the years. And he said that he just wants it done right. He certainly isn't opposed to the idea of a racetrack there. He said he's willing to support it, but these noise issues he thinks have to be resolved better in his mind before he puts any support behind it. The problem is that a lot of neighborhood groups obviously oppose it, and he also doesn't have any specific suggestions as what the RSHOT people can do to try to resolve this.
We have a cut from Mandy Trimble's report. Attorney George McHugh represents a developer. He promised commissioners that any noise would be mitigated by 35-foot sound walls, although at this time only two walls are planned.
Right. The and that's just it. If there have been conflicting and competing for some reason or competing noise studies by both proponents and opponents saying that, yes, the sound walls will contain the noise so it won't bother neighbors too much. The opponent's noise study has questions whether the noise walls can really work. The question is that obviously it's a big unknown. Nothing like this has really been done in a central city area. A lot of people think that the city can't enforce the noise ordinance that it has well enough as it is. So right now it's basically between, as the proponents and the opponents kind of gather their resources and their arguments and go to city council and the mayor's office and try to sway them of their side. And we'll see what happens. It's going to be a very, very interesting few weeks.
Let's hear what George McHugh said in defense of the racetrack.
If we don't meet the noise requirements, we have to modify the cars. As you can see, just north of our site is one of the busiest freeways in the state. There's hundreds of thousands of cars a day to go by there. We're looking at several days a year having 30 to 40 cars going around a track. So the issues of noise or other pollution are really, those are total red herrings.
Now, when I think of cars going by on the freeway, I don't think of cars racing around a track. I've been to racetracks before. There is a difference, isn't there? Or is he making a good argument?
Well, I mean, certainly the race cars are loud and can be loud. The RSHOT people had signed a good neighbor agreement with a newly formed civic association called the Southwest Civic Association, where RSHOT would agree to self-monitor the track, and if noise levels got to be too much, they agreed to pay fines of up to $20,000 to this new community foundation that would help pay for various either public improvements around the racetrack or for scholarships for area residents. So they're trying to say, if we break any kind of rules or regulations regarding noise, we're willing to step up and pay fines. That drew some snickers from the audience at the Development Commission because RSHOT would be self-monitoring that, and some people wonder how effective that would truly be.
If you have a question or comment for our guest, Mark Ferencek, Columbus Dispatch reporter, we're talking about the redevelopment of Cooper Stadium into a racetrack. Give us a call, 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. We're also on Facebook if you want to check out All Sides with Ann Fisher Facebook page. If you have a question, if you're for or against the redevelopment to a racetrack, let our screener know right off the bat that you're for or against. I have in front of me a copy of it's addressed to Mayor Michael Coleman, and it's asking him to consider the interests of the neighborhood. It's regarding Cooper Park. It's a what do I want to say? Not a survey. It's a well, they were asking for people to sign it and print their addresses and stand behind
a petition.
Sorry, thank you, Mark.
Yeah.
Thank you. I don't have a little word person sitting here with me to help me fill in those gaps. Anyway, the petition. You've heard about the petition.
Yeah, there's. The interesting thing about this is while there have been certain groups for and against this, certainly the Franklin Tenaria Commission, for example, came out against this, but the Franklinton Board of Trade has come out for this, basically citing jobs. Within the various neighborhoods around here, whether it be the southwest area, which is the area just directly to the south of Cooper Stadium, or Franklinton, which is directly to the north, or even German Village, directly to the east across the river about a mile. There's no one opinion as to whether this would be good or not. You still obviously have a lot of residents who are interested in the potential of jobs. On the other hand, you have a number of residents, both in Franklinton and German Village, for example, who really do fear the noise. And again, each of these groups are trying to put together efforts to sway the public officials as to their side. Carol Stewart, who is who heads up the Franklinton Area Commission, had asked the city basically for an independent noise study, and that the city should fund that. And I spoke with Andy Ginther, the city council president, about that this morning, and he doesn't seem to be in favor of that. He said there's already been a number of noise studies, and he wondered about the city spending $75,000 on another noise study and how much that would really resolve, he wondered. So I don't know if another noise study is going to be done. I don't know that the mayor is necessarily in favor of that either.
Speaking of Andy Ginther and the city council, what is the sense about council's support for this? The county commissioners came out early on.
Right. Well, obviously, the county wants to sell the property.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's a big thing about this. When Andy made his statement last week, he basically said that it should be studied a little bit more. He'd be willing to talk more with neighbors about it. It seemed like from his words, though, he's pretty much in favor of the concept of this. I guess he just needs to be convinced that this is the best plan, and if the developers have taken enough steps to ensure that noise is not a problem in the area.
614-292-8513. You can call that number if you'd like to speak with Mark Ferenchik, if you have a question or comment for us regarding the redevelopment of Cooper Park. And caller from Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Hi. I would like to know a little bit more about this comment that was made about an agreement that was signed with a new group. And who this new group is, and are these folks in this new group carpetbaggers? What does both sides of this discussion have to say about that agreement new group?
Are you talking about the Southwest Civic Association?
Yeah, new group is that is supposedly, on the inside track in the approval of this.
Okay.
And all of the discussion that goes around that, because that sounds a little bit like something might have got hijacked.
Mark, tell us more about that organization.
Well, the Southwest Civic Association is a new group, and the leader of the Southwest Civic Association is a woman named Stephanie Coe, who is also a member of the Southwest Area Commission. The Southwest Area Commission has given its approval for the idea of the track. Stephanie Coe also was interested in becoming one of the two new council members, and that didn't work out. She said that the new civic association has been in the works for a while, that it's the best way in some ways to address neighborhood concerns, but she acknowledged certainly that the track was one of the impetuses behind it. And she said that in order for a good neighbor agreement to be signed, apparently it's difficult to enforce them if you signed it with an area commission, which is a city creation. So the civic association did sign a good neighbor agreement, and it certainly helps the developer out, because they can go to the city and say, look, we have an agreement with the group representing the neighbors that we will agree to certain things to protect their interests once the track is built. Now, some people, I think, are skeptical about what the intentions are with all this, but it gives the developer a way to go to the city to say, look, we've agreed to these things. Some of those things also include, again, the Arshot people say that they're willing to pay $50 per ticket into this community foundation, again, to help pay for scholarships for community residents and also unspecified public improvements around the track.
Okay, thanks to caller from Columbus. We have a lot more calls if you want to get in on the action, 614-292-8513. And Scott from Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome to the show. Hi, Scott.
Yes, hello. How are you?
Good.
Thanks for taking my call. As I said to your screener, I went to an awful lot of baseball games down there at Cooper Stadium. And one of the things they did at the end of the game was pretty interesting. They shot off fireworks. And it was probably about 10 o'clock at night. And I don't know that anybody ever complained about that. And the other thing is that a lot of people aren't aware of is we had in the SCCA, Sports Car Club of America, we used to run solo competitions down there during the day on the weekends, Saturdays and Sundays during the day. And we would self-regulate noise. And anybody that was above a certain amount of decibels, and I believe it was 95, I may be mistaken with the number, was admonished for that. And I think it's a non-issue. I don't think the people in the graveyard next door are going to complain about the noise.
Thanks a lot for your call, Scott. But there are the birds, Mark. Are the birds still a concern for regarding the noise and that kind of a thing?
Well, the birds are a concern in terms of the people with the Scioto Audubon Nature Center, certainly a concern with the folks in Metro Parks. The gentleman, the caller just mentioned, again, the cemeteries. Actually, the people at Greenlawn Cemetery are concerned, obviously not for the people who are there, but for people who are
permanently.
Yeah, permanently, correct. But for visitors, for people who obviously have scheduled services, the argument that the racetrack people are making is that, you know, the races in general would be held at night. However, there could be practice sessions during the day. There certainly are visitors there at many different times, visiting loved ones at the cemetery, and the Greenlawn Cemetery Board has come out against the track proposal because they feel that it would be way too disruptive. The birds, again, there's a similar concern. Arshot hired somebody to do a study saying he didn't think that the track would affect the birds too much, but the Scioto River is a natural pathway for migratory birds, and apparently the Greenlawn Cemetery is a nesting spot. And so people, again, at the Audubon Center and certainly at Metro Parks are very worried that the noise is going to disrupt the bird populations on the Whittier Peninsula and near the track.
614-292-8513. We're running out of time. And Donald, you're the director of the Ohio Wildlife Center. Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. Well, I just had some comments. You know, I did some review of noise in wildlife, and there are studies that suggest, and most of the studies involve noise generated by road and traffic. And in the Netherlands, at least the group that did extensive studies on this of birds in both woodland and grassland habitats found that there was a density depressing effect of the birds, and these are nesting birds.
Tell me what you mean by density depressing.
Well, that means the number of birds per unit area.
Okay.
You know, that were nesting, and it had a depressing effect on over 60% of the woodland species and nearly 60% of the grassland species as well.
Okay.
And what they figured from these studies was a road effect distance, which was generated by various methods, but found that there's up to 1,000 meters from these roads that generated these levels, and anything above 50 decibels was considered deleterious to these nesting, effects on these birds. And then the other thing is that Greenlawn is Greenlawn Cemetery has over 3,000 trees, mature trees that have been there from the 1800s, and they form a huge reservoir of these insects and caterpillars in the spring when they nest out that attracts a whole population of birds called neotropical migrants. That is the warblers, the vireos, some of the thrushes, and some of that.
Mm-hmm.
And most of those birds are upper canopy birds, meaning that they're in the upper reaches of these trees and foraging when the buds are bud out.
Mm-hmm.
Then the caterpillars, which are,
oh yeah,
you know, are they eat the leaves and they're associated with the leaves and they can even strip a tree if there's no predation of those caterpillars.
So what's the problem with loud? I mean, what's the problem? What's the danger to them?
Well, it would mask any predator arrival, a voice, you know, associated alarm calls. When there's a predator in the environment, birds issue an alarm call, which then alerts their own species as well as other species know the alarm calls of other species. So what happens is if that is done, then what they do, they spend more time not foraging,
okay,
but being vigilant and looking, using their eyesight for predator avoidance.
Okay.
And so, you know, that communication would be interfered with. And birds do hear very well up, you know, in 100 hertz, very loud and very soft in the 8 to 10 hertz,
okay,
ranges. And they're very sensitive, and they communicate with each other. And the
okay.
birds that I'm talking about are not the birds that really nest there as much. I mean, it'll affect those birds as well. And,
okay.
and it affects humans.
Hey, Donald.
Yes.
I got to let you go because we're running out of time.
Yes, okay. Well,
but I am really glad you called. Thanks. Mark Ferenchuk of the Columbus Dispatch, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you, Ann.
Sorry we ran out of time. We don't have time to talk to everybody who called or wrote, but thank you for your participation. That's all the time we have today for All Sides with Ann Fisher. This is WOSU 89.7, WOSU HD1, and WOSU 820 Columbus, and streaming online at WOSU.org, 89.7 NPR News, a service of WOSU Public Media.
Support for 89.7 NPR News comes from the Sherrington Group, financial planners and investment managers providing financial advice and client-focused solutions to help grow and preserve clients' wealth. The Sherrington Group, planning for success, managing for life at sherringtongroup.com.